Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Techish, starring Abadesi of Hustle Crew and my amazing co-host
Michael Behane. I love the fact that you said starring. I feel so important now.
That's how we do. Cool. We got more fans now. So
yeah, we big now. Yeah. All right. So, but not as big as Kanye, who's going to be president. So let's talk about that.
Yay, 2020. We need a sound effect here.
So basically, long story short, he's come out and tweeted, "I'm running for 2020." Elon Musk then came out and said, "Yo, you got my full support." In fact, they took a picture together recently. So I think they linked up and had a little brainstorming session and realized, like, "Yo, let's."
Azealia there.
Yeah, boy. So, what's the thought process behind this beyond just the absolute ego? Or is it just pure ego driving the dude, and there's no strategy behind it? Because basically, it looks like he's giving this to Trump, because he will siphon off, you know, potentially young black voters. And that's Biden's kind of demographic, without going too much into the weeds of, you know, American politics.
Yeah.
Like, it's a Trump landslide then if he gets involved, right? Or do you think he's thinking for Trump, or do you think he's just like thinking for himself and not really thinking at all? Like, what's
wrong with him and Trump being homies, man? What happened to that?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Trump to tweet about this. I just think it'd be hilarious to see what he says.
But he might be Trump's biggest friend. That's what I'm saying to you. He might end up giving Trump the presidency, because Trump's in trouble because of this whole COVID thing. And now, if Kanye comes in on the third party, normally third parties end up just like hurting one of the other two competitors, and most likely Biden.
Well, I mean, let's think about this, right? It's not the first time he has said he wants to be president of America.
Right.
And, you know, he's a man with a healthy sized ego. He's got a lot of ambition. I mean, this is someone who literally called himself a god in a previous album. So am I surprised? No. Of course not. Mm. Why not 2020? That's all I'm going to say. Why the F
okay, cool,
not?
Cool.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay, cool. So let's say there's ranked choice voting. Yeah. You're not just voting for one person. You got to rank them. So 1, 2, and 3. What's your order?
I would actually genuinely probably put Kanye first. Why not? Let's just go.
Are you serious? Ahead of Biden. Kanye, then Biden, then Trump.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? I mean, at this point, Michael, honestly, why not? What's your rank order?
So obviously I would do Biden and then Kanye, then Trump. I mean, I'm not a fan of Biden. Obviously, this is the part where the British person speaks on American politics, but I'm not a super fan of Biden anyway, full stop.
But you're still putting him above Ye.
Ah, come on, bro.
Who gave you the club bangers? Who gave you the jabs? Houseway? How?
Yeah, to be honest, in terms of like cultural influence, Kanye's had more of an influence on my life than
exactly.
Biden.
But
Biden did bring
also, Biden's like 3,000 years old. At least Kanye is fit and fighting.
Listen, man, don't be ageist. You know what I'm saying? This is not an ageist podcast. We support our old people. Come on.
Oh,
what was that?
Actually,
old people, man. Start companies.
Do you know what, though? I will be the first to stand up for the old age pensioners in the mix. Please shout out our over 50 listeners, over 60 listeners, over 70
listeners.
That's what I'm
saying. All five of
However,
you.
All I'm saying is, when there's 300 and counting million people in a country, you need someone who's got the intellect to keep up with social media and all the happenings of the world. Yeah,
no,
you do.
I don't want Kanye with the nukes. I don't want Kanye with the nukes. I think it's amazing that I feel like Kanye, Elon, because Elon was supportive, and Trump, they're kind of like the same person. Do you get what I'm saying? You famously called Elon the Donald Trump of tech, and I think you're onto something.
Because yeah, they're kind of
like, yeah, they've got this kind of, it's like the world has been given to the trolls, and the trolls are all rich and powerful. I don't understand, like, what's going on? Like, what is the link between these three individuals? Like, the mindset of just like
power.
Power at all costs.
Listen to the track. Go back and listen to it. Go back and find that track. Honestly, like, we can literally write Kanye's manifesto based on all of his previous albums. But if I'm serious for one second, I think what's really, really sad, I mean, I wrote a tweet about this, is that we do see a positive correlation between net worth and size of ego. And I think Chamath said this best, but he said, you know, the goal of so many rich entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, any sort of innovator, ultimately is to shape the world to your vision, right?
Yeah,
and he
absolutely.
Gives an example of how, like, the Koch brothers and a lot of, you know, cisgender straight white men have done this quite effectively, right? They're shaping the world in a way that most benefits them and their goals. Their goals being, I like life the way it is, I just want a bit more money.
Right.
And I want to eliminate some of my annoyances and my problems. That's basically like, I don't know, all that happens at Davos, I'm guessing. Like, yo, how do we stay richer? and weed out all these annoying people. And I think there's something about the role of president, especially since the current orange man has taken it over, that it's just become another status symbol. It's like, how do I get into the 3-comma club? Okay, cool. I've done that. Forbes put me on the list. Right. How do I get into space? Okay, cool. I'm on the SpaceX wait list. What's next? What's that? Launch a fashion line. Yep, done that. Billboard number 1. one. Yeah, done that. What's that thing that everyone wants to get where it's like you get a Tony and a Grammy and an EGOT?
EGOT.
It's
EGOT, like,
Yeah, okay, got to have an EGOT. Man, what else is there left to do on this one time on Earth? What else can I add to my legacy? Yeah. Oh, president! Sick! Let me be president, and then I can start a war with that country that didn't give me a visa once, and then I can, like, do this and do that, and I can, like, put all my homies in government and let them fill their pockets. Like, I don't know. We need to seriously re-examine what we value in society, because I kind of think it's really troubling and concerning to me that positions of influence are turning into status symbols.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think they've always been status symbols. I don't think the kids that went to Harvard and Stanford really wanted to become president because they wanted to help people. Let's not front, like Ronald Reagan, George Bush, like these guys wanted to be president because it was daddy was president, or like, you know, it would look important. But the difference is now is what are the background of the individuals that are now becoming president? Mm. It's now Trump has opened the floodgates and basically said anyone with any bit of celebrity or notoriety can now just bum rush the door and just get in. Like, you don't have to be governor. I mean, yeah. Reagan was an actor. Schwarzenegger was an actor. Schwarzenegger couldn't have been president because he was foreign born, but he could have conceivably have been president. It's just the fact that now with social media and the way Trump has done it is that being brash, not paying attention to the rules, skipping ahead of the line has now worked. So now anyone's going to do it basically. Whereas before you had to do it the long way.
Interesting.
So on a more positive news, actually, I would say that last week was probably one of my favorite weeks in terms of like black tech news, because so many like great announcements were made. So Bazoma St. John has been hired as Netflix's chief marketing officer.
CMO,
Black Girl Magic. And then, so shout out to her. Ryan's putting some applause there, Ryan. And then on top of that, Netflix actually, going forward, they're going to put at least 2% of their cash reserves into black-owned banks. And I think that's fantastic. I think they even have done an open letter saying to all the other kind of big tech companies that if the S&P 500 just shifted 1% of its cash, it would translate into more than $20 billion. Now, why is this important? Because black-owned financial institutions are starved of capital. They can't loan to businesses. They can't give out mortgages, right? Because they don't have that capital that a normal bank has, right? Or not a normal bank, a predominantly white-owned bank. Let's say that, because I don't want to use that word normal. Yeah, like, so fantastic. I mean, I commend that. And I think actually one of the greatest stories about it is the fact that it was a black executive within the company who Netflix has these dinners essentially full its kind of underrepresented people in the company. And he pitched the idea, then he pitched it to the CEO and it moved up the chain of command and it got approved. And I just love the fact that, you know, at least I'm sure it's not a perfect company. I'm sure there's a lot of problems that still need to be resolved within the company, but at least those efforts were being made to listen to kind of black executives within the company. And yeah, more power to them. I hope it's, yeah, more of the same. And then
where
also
the other companies at? Where the other companies
at? Come on,
I was
man.
Looking at Nike's executive team the other day, all white. I was looking at Adidas' executive team the other day, all white. I was like, hey, like, do a breakdown of how much black audiences put into your pockets and represent us up there. That's what we're asking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, I think the Bazoma St. John hiring is a recognition of the truth, which is that global culture is pushed by American culture and American culture is pushed by black American culture. So hiring a black woman to be your CMO is actually just a super savvy business move, because if you look at like the conversation on social media, on Twitter about Netflix show, it's driven by black people. Black folks are doing all the memes, you know, making things go viral. So that is just a recognition of the absolute truth that you need a black voice on the marketing
it's
team.
Because it's
absolutely, yeah.
I want to see her as CEO next, and then putting black people on the board. And yeah, all the other marginalized folks. Let's get more queer people on the board, Muslim people on the board, disabled people on the board. Let's do it.
Yeah, and then Amazon acquired a self-driving startup called Zooks, which has been led by Aisha Evans. She's a black female CEO. I think she was formerly at Intel. She's not the founder, but she has been in charge as CEO, and the company was acquired for $1.2 billion. That's billies. How you do it.
All about the billies, baby.
Make it rain. Yeah, I mean, I saw it posted on like I think it was like some meme page, and they were like, and all the comments predominantly like a non-tech audience were like, well, she's not the founder, so does she have ownership? And the reality is, when you're the CEO of a company at that scale, you have a sizable equity position. So she's doing all right. And yeah, black women get it done, man. That's fantastic news. I love it.
Dude,
it does. I mean, I think, to be honest, actually, that like there is about two or three more other stories related to like black VC funds raising money and like black individuals raising money for their company. So there's so many we can't even go over. I'm gonna put the link in the show notes because I covered it all in the Pocket Weekly. Because I think, to be honest, man, like this whole like taking down the statues, as relevant as that is, I'm more concerned about where the resources are going. Where is the money going? Is the money
show
changing hands?
Me the money.
The money. Show me the money, Cuba Gooding Jr. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, as much as all these cultural like touch points are important and relevant, and they do matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's, a lot of it is a distraction. Like a lot of it is like, yo, where's the resources? Are they changing hands? And that's all I care about, really, to be honest. That's what I'm focused on.
This episode is sponsored by Bonusly. Bonusly is an engaging recognition and rewards platform that enriches your company culture. They are looking for a senior level, full stack software engineer on Pocket Jobs to join their expanding product team. As an early hire, you'll be responsible for design and development of new systems and features for our market leading bonus, reward and recognition platform. Link is in the show notes.
So let's jump into this whole Clubhouse takes on cancel culture and journalistic integrity debate. This is kind of crazy. So if you remember, Clubhouse is an app that we covered earlier this year because they raised a crazy $10 million seed round that all of Silicon Valley were trying to get their hands on. And we just, you know, all kind of side-eyed it a little bit because at that point it was only really a small beta group of people that had used it, mostly VCs themselves. And it felt a bit like, wow, getting a $100 million valuation with this little validation is quite interesting. But anywho, whatever. Fast forward to present day, and this invite-only app is basically based around audio chat rooms. So you literally like open up Clubhouse. I got an invite the other day. So, you know, you open it up, you see who's talking, you can enter a room and people are having a conversation. Now, the journalist Taylor Lorenz, who is famed for identifying like trends on the internet, specifically amongst Gen Z. So she's written for The Atlantic. She's also now at The New York Times. And she's very vocal about some of the, you know, systemic challenges and issues within tech. But anyway, there's been a lot of conversations recently about cancel culture. And I just find this so interesting because we've talked about cancel culture on the show as well. But basically, like, things came to a head. Tell me if I'm understanding what happened correctly, Michael.
Go on.
But there was a debate in a chat room. And
Rewind. So what happened is that Taylor Lorenz, she screenshotted the Instagram story of the former CEO of Away. So the former CEO of Away, prominent female founder, she basically was forced to step down because of bad behavior at the company. So she had done an Instagram Q&A essentially saying how somebody asked her, what do you think about these kind of takedown stories of the female founder and the former CEO of Away, Steph Curry, I think her name is. She was like, oh, you know, it's all for clicks. There's an incentive to take down the female founder because it's a juicy story. So Taylor Lorenz basically then screenshotted that on Twitter and said, oh, unfortunately, she hasn't learned anything from her behavior. You know, she's still justifying, you know, the disgraceful behavior, etc., being critical. Then Balaji, who is the former CTO of Coinbase and a former investor at Andreessen Horowitz, so everyone, I hope everyone's paying attention. He's been going hard at basically the press in general and people like her. So he's saying to her, yo, like, back the F up, essentially. And that essentially that journalists are no longer journalists. Journalists now are on equal footing with tech companies, and that he has the right to be a citizen journalist and go at her equally. And then it's gone to Clubhouse now and everyone's saying that, I don't even know what he's saying. His point is that the press is no longer this esteemed institution that we have to respect. Essentially, we can go equally as hard as them. They're actually just harassing the CEOs. They're actually harassing female CEOs harshly. And that we need to live in a world of citizen journalists where we can equally clap back, and that there is no distinction anymore between what is journalism and what is now citizen journalism, right? So kind of a Trumpian idea that the press are the enemy of the people, but also an idea that actually the tools of journalism have been dispersed. Anyone could be a journalist. Technically, me and you are journalists. We comment on media.
Mm.
We produce media. So that therefore, the New York Times doesn't have a monopoly of the truth. Therefore, what this individual was saying, Taylor Lorenz, about the CEO of Away, we can just go back at her and just be like, yo, you're chatting-ish, whatever, whatever. So people overheard on Clubhouse a lot of stuff like this was being said. In fact, actually, Felicia Horowitz, who is the wife of Ben Horowitz, sorry, was quoted to have said on Clubhouse, you can't effing hit somebody, attack them, and just say, hey, I have ovaries, and therefore you can't fight back. Essentially saying that Taylor Lorenz now is throwing her hands up saying, oh, why are you guys attacking me when she spent all this time attacking other female CEOs? So talk to me on that, because you know what? Back in the day, me and you did have that debate about the female CEO takedown.
Yeah.
I think at both times, we both felt like, actually, this is kind of now just turning into a thing where it's like, it's a disproportionate amount of attacks just based on the fact that it's a juicy story.
Yeah. Right?
So to a certain extent, we kind of agree with Balaji in the sense that, you know...
Don't put me in that bucket. I do not agree with him. Don't put me in that bucket. Don't put me in that bucket. I gotta protect myself here.
I don't agree with his methodology. I think he's almost doxing her and he's almost attacking this individual.
He is doxing her, Michael. He is doxing her. Like, one thing that you left out is the fact that he created a tweet basically with a bounty saying, I'll pay $1,000 in Bitcoin to anyone that can diss her through a meme and, like, I'll give you the winning... whoever has basically the most amusing meme dissing her, I will give $1,000. So that's not kind of doxing, that is doxing.
I wasn't aware of that. That's horrible. I'm making the point that philosophically that he made about female CEOs being taken down unfairly, I'm saying that we were in that camp initially. I'm not saying that we agree with who he is as a person, his methodology, his perspective, whatever, right? But obviously a broken clock can be right twice a day is the point I'm making here, right? So obviously this has descended into a complete shit show, and a lot of the behavior that Balaji's done, I don't agree with. It's despicable, right?
I don't know why more VCs didn't step out and be like, take this tweet down, man.
Some have. But go on, carry on.
Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing in all of this is that when we fail to understand systems of oppression that exist in our society, in the US, in the UK, in the white Western world, when we fail to understand that they exist, when we fail to understand how they operate, when we fail to understand the role that institutions and individuals play together to perpetuate all of these things, we always end up talking around the problem and never talking about the problem. So I think the first thing we have to understand is that, as I understand it, when Taylor Lorenz was discussing basically like ex-OA CEO, you know, defending and justifying her actions, the conversation she was trying to have was, so many, especially white female founders, still fail to understand the systemic issues around which they were operating. So if you create a company that's branded on inclusion, you put all these diverse people in your campaigns, but then when you hire women and Black people, you do not treat them well. Mm-hmm. You are perpetuating a system of oppression in which women and Black people and other marginalized people are already mistreated versus other people with more privilege than them in the workplace. And that is something that we have to address because it's still a big issue and it's not going to go away overnight. So I feel like Taylor Lorenz was drawing attention to the fact that if you're still defending your actions, mm-hmm. instead of doing the work of dismantling the system of oppression or educating yourself about it and correcting it, then you have missed the point. And I think that point stands. And I think that's really powerful. And then I think when this conversation came into Clubhouse, again, because of a lack of understanding around systems of oppression, but also because of a lack of understanding of our own biases. I mean, this is literally why Hustle Crew exists, not to mention so many other companies. We do not in our minds have an understanding of likability bias and likability penalty. Michael, you and I were talking about this over iMessages the other day. Repeated studies show that when men behave assertively, we admire it because we have stereotypes of men in the media that show us that men should be assertive. Conversely, we have stereotypes of women in the media that show us that women should be compliant and kind and agreeable. So when women behave in an assertive way, we reject that behavior and we penalize that behavior. It makes us uncomfortable on an unconscious level, perhaps, but really what these actions show is kind of on an explicit level, on a level where someone is willing to put a bounty on a woman's head because she's annoyed him. So I think, you know, again, going back to like, you know, when I read that quote from Felicia Horowitz, and I totally understand this is like a, you know, private space. And
it's not though, is it? But is it exactly. private? How is it private? Exactly. There's nothing private apart from a welcome conversation.
Someone broke the code of conduct within the community by recording the conversation and leaking it because, you know, Clubhouse is supposed to be, you know, a one-off ephemeral thing.
Right.
So you're kind of going into the room in the confidence that what's said will never be repeated. It's just what you remember and everything that happened, blah, 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 blah.
Understood. Yeah.
But I think just hearing those words said, even especially from a Black woman, reminded me again of like how little we understand systemic oppression, even now still, and even as women, and even as Black women, and even also internalized oppression, right? Because, you know, women do often defend the patriarchal actions of men and the misogynistic actions of men. And sometimes it doesn't feel patriarchal or misogynistic at the time, just because we've internalized so much patriarchy and misogyny ourselves. So yeah, I don't know. I think like what's happening in the VC world right now is a protection of interests, and that's Absolutely. Not new. And we've talked about it on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe for 5 seconds that VCs particularly care about takedown of quote-unquote female CEOs. I think they want to protect their investments. Sure. That's what it is. These are people that invest in companies, and basically journalists are now putting scrutiny and putting daylight on what these companies are actually doing. So they're trying to protect their investments. And that's, I don't believe for 1 second that these people are now warriors for the women and women CEOs in general. Yeah. But I do think it does... Going full circle back to our conversation on the female CEO takedown, there is something about society where we just find these stories much more juicier. And I don't know what it is exactly, where it's salacious. I think we expect women to be probably, society expects women to be probably more maternal. So when we see women maybe probably doing the same behaviors that male CEOs do, which is treating employees harshly, being, you know, Scrooge McDuck and trying to squeeze out every dime and penny out of a person's capital and labor, we react to that more. So that is probably more to do with our own internal perception on what women should be. So that is probably why the stories do become juicier. But then it almost becomes a witch hunt where it's like we're looking for those stories. Like it wouldn't surprise me if there's three or four journalists right now on the beat and they're like, yo, let's look at this woman-led company.
I'll be next.
Yeah, you'll be next, fam. I'll be dropping some anonymous quotes. Like anonymous quote, Michael says that Abadesi actually is, I'll be an anonymous quote up in there.
She's
like,
mean.
She's mean.
She's physically violent. She's smacked me upside my head through the Zoom meeting. I think there's like such an important conversation to be had around trust, because that's also what it comes back to. Because if we look at the language and the mudslinging, each side of the debate is now trying to actively discredit the other. You know, when this guy says $1,000 Bitcoin to whoever can create a meme about this person, he's like, let's embarrass and shame and discredit her. And, you know, she herself has, you know, been very vocal and like sharing updates as they come out. But I think, you know, I kind of like was talking to my partner about it, and I was just like, you know, each party has their own incentives, right? Of course, a VC has, you know, wants to protect its investment. And also, you know, VCs have turned into the philosopher kings of the world, because capitalism is so warped. And it's like, wow, you've made loads of money. You must know things that I don't know. So why don't I give you all this power? It's like, no, you knew how to make money because of all these other variables. And anyway, whatever. And then on the one hand, you have journalists, and they're trying to tell you, hey, listen to me, trust me. I am telling you, you know, about reality. I'm telling you the truth. But of course, journalists have their own incentives too, right? Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, how do we as individual agents acting in a civil society, like, how do we trust information now? And this is so hard.
That's the macro problem. That is the macro problem, in a sense. I mean, listen, being British, we always knew that the newspapers ain't shit, because the British tabloids are notorious for just being racist lies. No, honestly... News of the World, The Sun, Daily Mail. Like,
it doesn't even exist anymore. That's how messed up our newspapers are.
Exactly, right. But I think in America, the kind of like New York Times had that prestige where it was like, this is the arbiter of truth. So it's like now we're living in a world where actually the tools that the New York Times have are pretty much the same, the tools that anyone has. Anyone can go out and write content. So who now is the arbiter of truth? I don't know. And in the economy that's driven by clicks, in terms of the advertisement-based model, the incentive to just, you know, do these kind of female story CEO takedowns has increased, right? And I don't necessarily, as in, forget the doxing. Okay, that's a hard thing to say. Doxing is terrible, obviously. But in just terms of the philosophical underpinnings of who's right or who's wrong in terms of their argument, I don't necessarily agree with any of them. It's like, I see both perspectives. The female CEOs have misbehaved. The stories are obviously being driven by clickbait, basically, essentially.
Yeah.
Balaji has a point that the press is incorrect, in the sense that the press is now on a level playing field with individuals as citizen journalists, kind of, right? But then also he was wrong to dox her, and he is maligning her unfairly, in my opinion, because I don't think she should be targeted in this way by herself. She's not the only one, number one, and it's unfair to do that to a female journalist, full stop. So there isn't any hero or villain to me in the story. I mean, there is villainous aspects, but there isn't anyone who's completely, like, you know, in the right here. So it's a very complicated story. I mean, I hope the audience followed, because it's a very complicated story, and I'm realizing how complex it is.
Yeah, it is, but it's such an important conversation to have, because it touches on so many of the things that we talk about. It touches on trust, it touches on the role of the press, the role of VCs, it touches on patriarchy and systemic oppression, and what happens when two agents with different privileges clash. And what's so interesting about this debate is that he brought up Brown Guy quite a lot. He was like, oh, so Taylor Lorenz said, I fear for my life. Oh, he knew what he was doing. And Taylor Lorenz said, I fear for my life because I've, you know, people have been hacking me. If anyone's familiar with Gamergate, you know, this is exactly what they're doing to her. They're trying to do Gamergate to her. They're trying to ruin her life, basically, really violent and threatening hackers. And he came out very publicly. He refused to respond to any of the press directly, but he's using his platform and Twitter and started saying, so Taylor Lorenz is afraid of a brown guy? And she's like, if she's not afraid of a brown guy as she walks through the streets of New York, then why should she be afraid of me? Or if she is afraid of me, then she's clearly afraid of brown guys. And I was like, wow, now what's happening? Yeah. Now he's trying to say that she's racist? And this is an argument with a racist? Anyway, it's just, especially with the timing and everything that's happening, it's such an interesting exploration of conflict, especially through the lens of intersectionality.
This episode is sponsored by Mode Analytics. Mode is a powerful collaborative analytics platform designed by and for data scientists. Armed with tightly integrated SQL, Python, and interactive data visualization tools, data scientists use Mode to turn data into actionable insights in one central location. They are hiring for a solutions engineer on pocketjobs.com. You will serve as a technical guide and advisor to prospective customers, bringing advanced solutioning skills and subject matter expertise to connect customer needs to Mode's value. Link is in the show notes.
One final thing I wanted to say is, do you think, Michael, that the tech industry, more than any other industry, is a vengeful one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of egos involved. I think the famous story is of Sean Parker when he was screwed over with Napster. So when he teamed up with Mark Zuckerberg to get investment for Facebook, he screwed over like one VC fund. I think it was Sequoia. I think I might get that wrong. So in the end, you've heard of Founders Fund, which is quite a famous like VC fund. They were set up basically to be like, we're on the support of the founders, because essentially Sean Parker eventually backstabbed one of the most famous VC firms in the world to make sure they didn't get into Facebook because they betrayed him. So this kind of stuff happens all the time, right? So yeah, it's definitely a vengeful industry that you got money, egos. I mean, you can write books and movies about all of this stuff, that, you know. So without a question, absolutely. But to be honest, I think the saddest thing about this all is it's such a distraction. I tweeted about how like these VCs are more upset about, you know, their investments getting harshly looked at than, you know, black people being killed. And I found it such a distraction. To be honest, like, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to talk about it on the pod, because I was like, as interesting as it is, it's like what is the outcome of any of this, really and truly? Like, you know, I found it such a distraction, honestly. And it stems from the egos of the VCs, and that's the problem also.
So I feel like it's exactly why we should discuss it. The absurdity around the fact that someone as influential as some of these investors chose to spend this amount of time. I mean, this is a disproportionate amount of time in terms of like the impact it could create on their goals and stuff like that, to basically like focus hate on one person. It shows the pettiness of them. And it shows the egoism of them. And I want us to remember that it doesn't matter if you're a billionaire, you can still be petty as fuck. And you can still act in a vindictive and malicious way, perhaps even more so because your behavior is unchecked. So let's not expect a new wave of benevolent billionaires to be popping up anytime soon. And let's be mindful.
100%. Yeah, so you know what, fam? You know those philosophers and sages that said that, listen, man, success won't make you happy. It will never fulfill you. Achievements alone won't, you know, fill you up. Like, unfortunately, they turned out to be right, the damn bastards. I can't really go into any more depth than that, but basically...
Are you trying to tell me something, Michael? Are you becoming a monk?
You know what it was, yeah? Fam, I was looking at what I've done so far. I was like, wow, we've got, like, all these partners. We've got Snap, we've got Netflix, you know... Techish podcast was just featured in a newspaper, right? And I was like, I don't feel any different. And if you said to me 5 years ago all the things that I would have done, I'd done. And this is obviously sounds like a humble brag, but it's just like I would have thought by now there would have been a modicum of like, oh, okay, I'm satisfied, and I still haven't even hit that. And it's just like, talk to me on that, because I think I need your guidance, fam. Honestly, it's one of those things where you think that these things will kind of satisfy you, and don't get to say in my general life I am satisfied, but I just mean in the sense that on a professional level, I thought it would do more for me, in a sense of like, once I hit this, I'll feel like this. And once I hit that, and I've hit so many of the things that I wanted to do, and I'm still the same. And it's actually just a fascinating thing. Cause I mean, do you relate to what I'm saying? Or is it just like, you're like, fam, I hit where I want to hit, so I can't relate to this right now. Or is it like, I still have a ways to go.
I think I've always come at this a bit differently, in the sense that I'm very aware that the present is the only thing that's real. And the present is the only thing that matters. And for me, it's the journey towards the goal that is as enjoyable as the achievement of the goal itself. And I think that's just because I've had like an incredibly turbulent life, just in terms of my personal life, my upbringing. I mean, I talked about it a bit in the book, but, you know, I've also like lost people very close to me under really tragic circumstances. So I've just had a lot of situations in life that have made me realize the only thing that's real is right now. And I think also, just to your point, I'm extremely purpose-driven. And I think we say these words all the time, almost to the point where they actually lose their meaning. And I think for me, I look at value in terms of my time and my work through the lens of individuals in my community, as opposed to anything else. And I just think that's so important, because sometimes when we set those goals, like I can't wait to work with X company, I can't wait to work with Y company, it's because we see that as a means to an end. We see that as like a vehicle to achieve greater impact. Well, at least I think that might be what you're referencing. And then as we start to work with those companies, all of those expectations shift quite drastically, because we start to realize, oh, wow, actually, like, you're not as informed about this as I thought you'd be, or you're not as motivated about this change as I thought you'd be, that kind of thing. So I think it is really tough. But I also just think, I feel like the things that we want to enjoy, let's say if they're not materialistic, like people just diss you and call you like a hippie or a loser. Like, I don't know.
Call like what? What do you mean? Stupid,
but like, I just feel like there's an expectation that you should want more things materially. Right. Sometimes when we're not aspiring for the things that like capitalism is nudging us towards, we start to look like outliers and anomalies, and we get sometimes unwanted attention for that.
But I mean, I've never been one who's driven by material success, man. I wish I was driven more by that, because to be honest, then I would probably, maybe it might work for me a bit more. I've always been driven by just like, you know, a combination of A, purpose, but B, also just achieving my best and reiterating. Once I've done some of those targets, I was just like, wow, like I'm sitting there thinking 5 years ago, if you told me this, I would have thought I would have been like just smiling, grinning from ear to ear, but you don't. You acclimatized to whatever you're doing. So then I'm projected further forward, and I'm like, well, if I go to where I really want to go and I hit the targets I really want to hit, I don't think I'm going to feel any different. So what is the point? Not in a sense give up, but it's like you have to kind of rewire your brain. And I was trying to talk to friends of mine who are close to me about this, and they just couldn't relate, because they're probably not where they want to be like right now. So they're still in that moment where they're thinking, no, what are you talking about? Because once I get to where I want to go, I'm going to feel great. And I'm like, I don't think you will. If you're not feeling great now, you're never going to feel great, basically, if that makes any sense. No achievement or it's not going to change who you are at all, or it's not going to change your state of feeling, right? But the thing is, it's a cliche and everyone knows it, but nobody, it's one thing to know something, it's one thing to experience something. Yo, that's been this week's episode of Techish. Let us know what you think about what we talked about. Hashtag Techish. And then if you want extra content, hit us up on our Patreon. We got our podcast called Extra Ish, where we go through more of the latest weekly shenanigans. Abba, anything you want to, any parting words?
I've just been enjoying everyone jumping in on hashtag Techish over the last few weeks, getting involved in the debates. So please keep it coming and we will be replying.
Dope.